This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around New York City, and we get to listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and to find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Perfume Genius. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Benham Jones at WFUV. Benham, I know that you were really looking forward to this one. This was a really special set, and I was really taken listening to your conversation in the control room, just how candid, comfortable, grounded, and this sort of like gentle stoic contentment that just kind of emanates out of Mike. I thought it was beautiful. Mike was talking about how we kind of have to find a way to be comfortable with both the things in life that are horrifying and also the things in life that can be sweet. And I found that really moving. Tell me about chatting in the studio, listening to these songs and this new album, of course.
Yeah, very excited. I mean, a career that I had followed for a long time. And as Mike even says, he was talking about sort of the messiness of things. And, you know, Perfume Genius as a band doesn't really adhere to any particular genre. It's more of like a very much a soulful feel. Of course, his voice, but you hear a Perfume Genius song and you know that it's coming from the same sort of well. But at the same time, it can take turns into the very dramatic, the very campy, the extremely muscular kind of rock music. And I caught the show the night before we had this session, and I was blown away at how, you know, I was getting sort of like classic U2, but then there's also this layer of dirt all over it. And I didn't know how to prepare for this, because each record, seven records to date now, each one kind of taking a different direction, a different bite. He even said that he doesn't really set out writing these records knowing where he's going. So I thought that the best prep I could do was to go see the show.
Yeah.
And that was absolutely the truth. And I appreciated his candidness in this interview. I could tell that he was a little bit, he kept saying he was like kind of like loopy. and he talks to AI in the interview, but also just very sincere as he's talking about influences. I wouldn't have expected Townes Van Zandt, a number of other kind of like folky, rootsy artists, and not just talking about the sound, because that comes through on the new record Glory, which is very, you know, it starts with an acoustic guitar and that follows throughout. But just talking about Townes' own understanding of how resigned and at ease he was in the awfulness of the world. And that's something that Townes Van Zandt as a junkie had a unique perspective on. But now Mike Hadrius of Perfume Genius as this sort of queer icon in a world that is so fraught, where, you know, the rights of queer people in this country and in this world are not only the major news headline every week, but are just constantly under attack, is something that he's had to become at ease with, being both an icon and also someone who is in resistance to this terror.
Yeah. Let's get into some music so that we can kind of get this, the flavor. What is the first song that we're going to hear in this session?
First song off the brand new record. It's actually the second track on the record. It's called In a Row. And the band is incredible here. I don't remember everyone's name, but we have Meg Duffy, who also makes records as Hand Habits, who I love. They've got a new record coming out pretty soon. But yeah, new music from Perfume Genius live in Studio A. This is In a Row.
Inside a moving car, flopping in the trunk, going through, I think, a tunnel, counting every bump. I hear murmurs from the front, broken up. So I don't even know what's going on. Isn't that something? take me the long way around. Think of all the rooms I get out, choking on my spit. It's a serious thing. Finally, some lines for me. Set them up on the floor. Tracing every lonely mark on the basement wall. Calling out from every corner till somebody calls. This whole thing is so extra, so bizarre. So I don't even know what's going on. I hear them coming. I hear them coming. Take me the line.
Benham Jones, 90.7 FM, WFUV.org, up in the Bronx, sitting down with Mike from Perfume Genius. We just heard a track off the new record. That one is called In a Row. Full band here. Thank you so much for taking the time, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I caught the show at the Paramount on Tuesday and was blown away. It was the first time I'd seen you. And honestly, as soon as the show started, I knew I was in for something different, because I kind of thought from the records I had heard previously that you might be at the keys for most of the experience. And then to see you just liberated and moving was quite incredible. How has tour been for you? And I guess in general, what is the experience of bringing this record to life like?
Well, I started out performing behind the piano for, I think, the first two records, you know? And then the third record is the one where I decided that I need to stand up. And then the fourth one, I started to also move while I was outside the piano sphere, and now I kind of just flail around and go insane every night. So it's been a progression for sure. But I really love performing now. I mean, I was terrified when we first started, completely terrified. So it was enough to just do it, but now I kind of get off on it. So,
I mean, you emphasize the way that you move your body live on the cover of some of these recent records too. Do you feel like that connection to the body and the spirit of the performance, is that elevating your vocals, or has the instrument become the whole body?
I guess the goal is like ASMR. I want people to feel what I'm feeling, or their own, but something like intense and as resonant as what I am. So I think the moving, the body, has just become another way to try to give people that mirror, like that reflective energy, you know?
When the show was over, I was sort of waiting by the merch, because I was just checking it out, and streaming out, I saw at least a dozen people I knew, but from all different worlds. It was like the queers, I saw like the mutual aid kids, I saw the club kids, and it really struck me how this project, this space that you've created, is really welcoming to a lot of different people. And I'm wondering if you had that in mind when you started, or because it's still rock music to me, which feels in some ways, I don't even know how to say this, but like who you're going to see at a rock concert, you sort of never know these days with the state of mainstream rock music. But it seems to encompass everyone and get them all into the feeling. And yeah, I guess just about your audience and how that's grown and changed. It was a sold out show at the Paramount. It was amazing.
Yeah, sick. You know, I don't know if I have a handle on, like, there's no demographic, really. It's just everybody. And it changes record to record. It changes city to city. I kind of think of the children the most. I call them the children. They're probably like 32, but just the people that are the most excited. And I think about them when I'm writing too, you know, like tender little gay people. But I also love straight people and they're come to the show and I love them.
Well, I mean, it's cool. I always say that in this day and age when there's just so much discord and confusion and, you know, you take one side of the political spectrum far enough, it wraps around the other side. Mm-hmm. You don't know where you live anymore. I kind of think it's just going to be sound, some drone that hits us all on the spot, some song that gets us all in the feeling that we'll be the one to unite mm-hmm. all nations and all people. We can hope. You know? And there is certainly that power in the music that you're making, which is both cinematic and very kind of spiritually fulfilling. I can see the light show was very simple last night in many ways, but was also just so deliberate and felt so connected to the sound.
Yeah, I'm really happy with how everything's turned out. Like the visuals around the record, I'm really proud of them and love the videos that we made. And on stage too, like it is kind of pared down, I guess, in a way. I mean, it's more than where I started for sure, you know, because Grant, who does our lights, we've only had him for the last two records now, but it makes a huge difference because there's so many dynamic shifts in the songs. You know, I kind of like to do, you know, like the song is pretty and then it's disgusting like halfway through, and having the lights be able to enhance that makes a big difference.
And I was actually quite captivated by the, I think it was the music video for It's a Mirror, which is sort of like, it starts in a sort of cowboy place and then goes to this biker vibe, mm-hmm. classic kind of Kenneth Anger or John Ford iconography. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the music video and what that, or just music videos in general and how that fits into your vision?
Well, specifically for these videos, beyond the videos actually, just the still imagery around the record, most of the references were film scenes. It wasn't like an aesthetic reference. It was like an energetic one, like dynamics between characters in scenes that I wanted to have that energy in the photo. And like the It's a Mirror video, the opening scene of Cries and Whispers was kind of directly aped from the mm-hmm. video. Just because she's cycling through like grief and like a bunch of really intense emotions really rapidly, but in the kind of a paralyzed, like in the bed, I guess, because that song's a lot about like reckoning with this really intense internal feeling, but then really trying to engage still and like get over yourself or get over it. Or get over whatever you need to like reconnect with the world, you know?
It's really beautiful. And I mean, just, I feel less and less. And I know people are watching Bergman and are watching Ford and Ozu now because it's also kind of like trending and vogue to watch all the classic movies with, we have a social media now, we have Letterboxd and stuff.
Do you think that they're really, do you think that they're liking it or they're waiting to categorize it?
Hard to tell.
That's the only thing, but that makes me feel old thinking that way. Because maybe this is, they're just fully loving it. And I've been like, well, I think 3.5 stars.
I think people must be loving it because you cannot watch one of these classic films without feeling just so full, especially on, and I don't want to disrespect anyone's work or anything, but some of the content we get today is so anemic in terms of the actual deeper consciousness and stuff. But you watch Cries and Whispers and you are connecting to something that is primal that ultimately every human being is going to have to go through. I hope so. And I hope that even with the social media-ness of Letterboxd, it's an entree to getting back into that video store culture that was probably, I mean, it's very important to me growing up.
Yeah, me too. And I think it is. It's just different.
Could we hear It's a Mirror?
Yeah.
All right, amazing.
I will sing it immediately.
Thank you. Venom Jones on the radio, 90.7 FM here with Mike from Perfume Genius, the rest of the band, cut from the new record. This is It's a Mirror.
What do you get from the stretch in the rise and the tune? Leave me spiraling. Making you sick. It's a mirror, holy terror, taking focus off the horizon. It's a chorus, reaching for us, swarming locusts wherever we go. It's a sign.
Live in Studio A, Benham Jones with Perfume Genius, hearing the first single from the new record, Glory. That was It's a Mirror. Thank you all so much. Such beautiful sounds here. And that is the opening track or this?
Yeah.
Okay, opening track on the record. One thing that really struck me listening to this album through is how guitar forward it feels. I mean, it opens with kind of a rootsy vibe and that continues for the first couple songs. This is your fourth record with Blake Mills, mm-hmm. who is sort of like... He's been the wonder kid for years now.
Yeah.
I remember some friends in LA back in like 2009, they were like, we just met this guy. He's like 25 years old and he's playing with the Band of Horses, but we think he's going to be big.
Yeah. He's crazy. It's mind blowing.
Yeah. Has working with him brought the guitar more forward in the sound?
Oh, for sure. And I make room for him when I'm writing now. Like I wrote all these songs on piano, just piano and vocal and some harmony. And usually, that's usually the case, but it's a fuller arrangement before I go into the studio, which can shift and change. But this one, I kind of just made room for Blake and Meg, Meg Duffy, who plays with us. I made room for their guitar, too, and I could just hear it. It sounded like bandy songs, but I needed them to do it, you know?
Meg is here today playing mm-hmm. with you. The interplay between the sort of pluck and the stabs of the, you know, what we think of as classical guitars, and then these deep drones that are spreading out via what Meg is doing sonically. It's just such a collage and such a beautiful bed to lay in.
Mm-hmm.
You're here with the band today. Is this the same band that you made the record with?
Yeah, it is. Amazing. Minus Greg. Greg Ullman, who was in the studio with us too.
Cool. So who do we have playing with us today?
You have Tim Carr on the drums, Pat Kelly on bass, Alan Weifels, my husband, on synthesizers, and keyboards, and Meg Duffy on guitar.
Cool. And they will
and me.
They'll be with you through the whole tour?
Yeah.
Great. How does that sort of change the shape of what maybe the next record is going to sound like? You have this band that you've recorded the album with, and you're going to be sort of making a home with them on the mm-hmm. road. Do you jump off your next point for writing from the experience of playing with these particular people, does it feel like?
I don't ever go into writing with any intentions at all. But, you know, there are some subconsciously just from where you've been and who you've been around. And I'm sure I was definitely informed by how much I loved playing with them and playing these shows and realizing what our capabilities could be if we kind of harness that in the studio, too. And when I started writing, I didn't go in with that intention, but I could tell right away that that was going to be part of it. But saying that, I have no idea. I could want to do some like really off-putting electronic thing next. I don't know.
I actually did want to ask about that because I, like I said, coming out of the show, seeing the demographic, I was kind of wondering why I don't hear many Perfume Genius edits at the club yet.
Yeah.
And because it's certainly a community that embraces your records. You're one of the rare rock artists that gets the red carpet rolled out every time you put out a new album, at least in the discourse I'm in.
I like that.
Any interest in doing remixes or something more oriented towards the dance floor?
Yeah, but the dance floor specifically. I feel like everybody always asks me to sing like funeral dirges and stuff like that. I want to sing the hook on something, you know?
Cool. Any music these days that is particularly moving you or compelling to you?
Yeah. I love Jenny Havel. I love her new record. I love 1010 Benja. His last record was amazing. Who else do I like that's alive and is new? I don't know.
I love the Jenny Havel record also.
Yeah, it's incredible. So good. She's brilliant.
That whole community of sort of, is it ambient? Is it classical? Is it folk music that's happening with them? I'm forgetting the name. Jessica Pratt is kind of part of it. And that's a very cool thing happening in rock music again.
Yeah, I agree. They're both brilliant writers, too. Just really good writers.
Any other pieces of art that have just hit the spot for you lately?
A movie called The Beast.
Oh, that's
that came out
incredible.
Last year, maybe.
Yep.
I loved that movie. And the same with... I can be entertained and love new movies, but I rarely am ever like knocked over sometimes by them. I guess I actually am all the time. Now that I think about it, I just love everything. Like I'm not bitter. Like I'm down to really be obsessed with anything the minute I press play on it. But I guess I just get bummed out when I'm not sometimes. But I loved that movie. Yeah. And I want to see Ducournau. What is her name? French director. She did Raw. She did... I want to see her new movie, Titan. Yeah. Obsessed with that movie.
Yes.
I want to see her new one.
The Beast, particularly compelling right now, just of the current conversation around AI, and to have a work of art that moves through all these different phases and has this subtle understanding of AI that can be both quite terrifying, but also supportive and unique and a road towards the future. I guess just because you love that movie, I'm wondering, how is that whole thing playing out in your mind? Because I watched your show last night, and I saw Beth Gibbons a couple of months ago from Portishead. And one thing I said when I was talking about both of these shows, I just said, the computer could never, just could never. And so, yeah, wondering how that feels, the creep of that on the art and everything.
Like, if you remove the ethics of it, I still haven't seen anything that is doing it for me anyway. Like, maybe if it did it for me, I would rethink everything. I don't know. But even the stuff that's like really insane, like that is like, you know, like someone's arm turns into a hot dog and then it starts like flying around and it can seemingly is something that I would really be into. But there's a hollowness to it that just doesn't get to me. But if it was like doing surgeries, really good surgeries and stuff, instead of trying to like make music, maybe I'd be into it. Curing stuff. I'm into all that.
Yeah, I like I like the short films they make of the kittens with the muscles and stuff.
I love, let's be real. I like that too.
We like cute stuff. We like funny stuff. But honestly, just the kind of songs you're writing that sort of, and even hearing you in, just as you were setting up for soundcheck, you're talking about the fake out on a song or just that understanding of tension and working against expectations, at least in my experience. Yeah, like I said, the computer could never.
It couldn't. Maybe it could. I mean, I say all this, but like, I don't know why I'm adding this. But I remember watching Westworld, and I was like, well, they could have souls. Why not? Who are we to say what could have one just because we are like steak? You know what I mean? that's the container. I think it could be a container. Could be anything. But they gotta be cool for me to like it. You still have to be a cool soul. You can't be doing all this like, well, no, I guess I shouldn't say this into the radio because they're going to find me like these beginning song creation bots.
Ears everywhere.
Yeah. But I do love you. I'm just hoping to enjoy what you do more in the future.
And work in harmony together. the stage setup you had last night, you just had the chair. You also had the exercise ball.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these two kind of mundane elements that are, you play with and you work on. You had the rotating stage. I saw Mitski a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Her only stage prop was the chair too, which feels very kind of like very simple, mm-hmm. but it encompasses the whole history of dance.
That's true.
And choreography.
I don't know if I was intending that, but I mean, a lot of it is just what's around. And even when I've been rehearsing for, like, I did a dance performance with my friend Kate Wallach, who's a choreographer. We kind of utilize whatever's in the room too, and then get really attached to those things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get really attached to a foam roller. And then we're like, okay, now this has to be in the show, you know? But I like that.
I sent a picture of the show to a friend, and the first thing he said back to me was, that chair was developed by the Navy to make it, to make less weight on the naval subs.
Whoa.
And I said, I'm going to share that.
Is that true?
I think so.
Well,
that's,
you know?
That's his autism, is understanding all about the...
the chair.
Yeah, the that's chair cool. And the different manufacturing stuff.
That chair's from my kitchen. Well, it's from my dining room, so now I know.
Yeah, traveling the world mm-hmm. with you. Benham Jones live in Studio A with Perfume Genius, sitting down, having a conversation with Mike from the band. Thanks again so much for being here. It's been kind of a silly session. During soundcheck, we had fire alarms mm-hmm. going off. And this week, actually, and I don't know if it, sometimes these things don't resonate with me, but this week that we're recording this, we've lost both Sly Stone and Brian Wilson, we just found out. And I guess kind of wondering about classical or like classic influences of yours. I heard last night, I was saying to someone that I was at the show with, I hear Kate Bush and Peter Gabriel, Arthur Russell.
Oh, for sure.
But wondering what you refer back to.
Well, Arthur Russell in general, but specifically this last record, for sure. I was listening to his more like folky country collections of songs a lot over COVID, during COVID, and over it, I suppose. And Townes Van Zandt a lot during that time too. And just thinking about writing in a specific way. I mean, definitely Townes Van Zandt has this very like resigned quality, like an acceptance almost, not... an acceptance of how horrible things are and how heartbreaking they are and how beautiful and sweet they are too, like all at the same time. And that's, I don't know, that was really comforting to me. It wasn't like a denial of one of those things or just enhancing one part. It was kind of all of it all together. And that has been a comforting way for me to think about things over the last 2 years.
I hear that very much on this record. I have a note here, and I never want to tell anyone like what their music sounds like and stuff. But from my perspective, the record's called Glory, and I love it. I love every track on it, but it feels sort of intentionally less glorious mm-hmm. than some of the past records you've made, in a way less confrontational and more at ease with the struggle and the awfulness. So it is coming through. And
good.
Towns is someone that I feel. You're talking about, you think about the children when you're writing, and in light of the global calamity, the confusion mm-hmm. that we're all going through. I'm wondering how much you reflect on your own music and your identity as an artist, as a political one.
I didn't know when I first started writing songs, I just intended to share them with my friends. And then around the second record, that was the first time I'd ever been in the studio. But after the first record came out and I realized that people are going to listen to what I made, even if it's just a few people, and then playing shows and meeting some of the audience members, I just kind of had a sense of duty around sharing and not censoring myself and not changing pronouns or hiding anything, which organically I would just do anyway because I'm me and these songs are close to me. So by nature, it's going to be queer or whatever. But then to be more explicit, maybe sometimes more defiant, more, I don't know, kind of go into things harder and explore them, especially things that I wish that I had heard when I was younger, or things that I still need to hear that now that I know that me looking at them could maybe be helpful. Also, it's always been the same thing. Like some of the songs are very pointed and have like, I guess, a moral or a message, but most of them are like a mess and contain everything. And that's always been the most comforting thing to me listening to music is just like a companion and feeling, not a prescription or like a a tidy answer. It's more just like a catharsis and like finding someone that mirrors how you feel, and which is usually untidy.
Yeah, certainly. And a bit wild. That's the that's the wild combination.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know I mentioned this earlier and I can't quite articulate it. I should have thought about how, but I am just so grateful for you as an artist to make music that's untidy and that still feels like rock music. And I find myself more and more, I'm listening to drones and this sort of pseudo classical and electronic music and stuff. But my life, I came up playing in garage bands and that sort of stuff. So for the kids today to have someone at your level making music that is still, it's sensitive and it's sexy, but still muscular, is, it's just amazing.
Thanks.
Yeah. Really.
I'll take it.
Powerful stuff.
Thank you very much.
And a great show, a great band. Thank you so much to you all for being here today. Benham Jones in the studio with Mike and the rest of Perfume Genius. Can we hear another track from the record?
Yeah.
What do we got coming next?
No Front Teeth.
And yeah, it's a pleasure for me. I've been following your career for a long time.
Well, thanks for having me. Nice talking to you.
Thank you so much, Mike.
No front teeth where they all used to go, broken apart and shining. No front teeth, but a feeling I know, back where the starting line is. It's on the camera, thrown to the floor, and I grin just a little. It's in the palm of my hand, I feel something my entire life. It's fine.
That was Perfume Genius performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Mike and the rest of the band for joining us in our studio, and to Matador Records and Beggars Group. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, Holden Buckley, Sage Rochetti, and Thomas Lapis. Our FUV Live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Diana Juarez, Ina Volovich, and Liv Grant. Megan Suma is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host, Benham Jones.